Going out of the chaotic and tumultuous final year of the Trump administration, as the country was devastated by COVID, a racial reckoning, and a Capitol riot. It's all the subject of that new best-selling book, I Alone Can Fix It, by Washington Post reporters Phil Rucker and Carol Lenning. Rucker tells Dimitri the heart of the book involves Donald Trump always putting his personal needs ahead of those of the country.
Always. Our reporting shows that virtually every day of his presidency, he was prioritizing himself. And what I mean by himself is his political fortunes, his reelection chances, but also his personal brand, his personal popularity, his personal wealth, the well-being of his family. All of that was first and foremost in his mind and was the priority as he made his governing decisions. And it had deadly consequences in 2020 because he was faced with a true crisis, and that was the pandemic, the coronavirus. And, you know, he guided the country's response to the pandemic, thinking first and foremost about politics and his personal well-being instead of science and instead of the health and well-being of the American people.
How close, Phil, did we come to an attempted coup? Different, of course, from a coup that is actually successful?
Well, it depends on your definition of a coup. Certainly, there were moments in the aftermath of the November 3rd election when it appeared that Trump was trying to use his remaining days in power to take over the government, to install loyalists at the CIA, at the Pentagon, at the FBI. Some of that never came to bear, but it was certainly a plan and something that Trump wanted done. And the most harrowing thing that Carol and I learned in reporting for I Alone Can Fix It is that General Mark Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the top military officer in the United States, he had real fears of a coup. He thought that Trump would issue an order as commander in chief to effectively seize power and keep hold of power and stay in office despite the will of the people in a free and fair democratic election.
And not that we would take huge comfort in this, but Milley took great steps with others at the Pentagon to make sure that the president was not successful in any of those efforts.
That's right. Milley and the other joint chiefs, the heads of the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and the other branches of the military, they discussed this matter privately, and they decided that if Trump were to issue an order that was unconstitutional or illegal or that they otherwise deemed to be dangerous for the country, they would resign one by one in succession in sort of a slow and reversed Saturday night massacre, all designed to delay the execution of a presidential order that they considered unconstitutional and dangerous.
We know Milley is a student of history and a very serious man. He did draw those comparisons with Hitler in the 1930s, and one of the big headlines out of the book, the Reichstag moment that he described.
He studied Nazi Germany. He has studied wars and conflicts and diplomatic issues all around the world, and he saw immediate parallels between the way Trump was spreading misinformation with his supporters after the election, sowing doubt about the legitimacy of the election, and the sort of rhetorical tools of Adolf Hitler in the early 1930s as he was seizing power and taking over for the Nazi regime. And Milley, you know, described to some of his confidants that when Trump supporters came to Washington in December for a protest here in D.C., he thought that was a brown shirts in the street moment. Brown shirts, of course, a reference to the Nazis in the rise of Hitler. And so it was a really harrowing comparison. And frankly, Carol and I were pretty gobsmacked to hear that, because this is 2020. And you don't ever think you would hear an American president compared to Adolf Hitler in the year 2020.
And after that episode in late 2020, we, of course, had the Capitol riot. Once it began, the president, from what we understand and from your reporting and Carol's reporting, he didn't gather his national security team in the Situation Room to discuss how to end this crisis. What was President Trump at the time doing as those rioters were surrounding the Capitol and indeed going inside?
You know, it's incredible. Trump, according to our reporting, was watching television. He was transfixed by the images of his supporters laying siege to the Capitol, and he actually liked what he saw. He liked that they were storming the steps. He liked that they were waving his flag. He liked that they had red Make America Great Again hats on. He thought this was a show of force, a show of strength. All in his name, all to contest the election results. And he had to be persuaded over the course of multiple hours by his advisors, including his daughter Ivanka and Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, persuaded that he, as president, needed to issue an order, a directive to his supporters to stand down, to go home, to be safe, to stop enacting violence. He did so, of course, but it took a couple of hours for him to do it. Meanwhile, he was completely AWOL when it came to executing a government response to what was a real crisis. The Capitol was under siege by violent rioters. It was actually Vice President Pence who had to fulfill those duties, who coordinated with leaders at the Pentagon to make sure that the National Guard were being deployed, to make sure that there was a military response underway, to try to get federal law enforcement up to the Capitol as soon as possible, to help out U.S. Capitol Police, who were so overrun and outmanned and beleaguered by that point. Those are all things that a president ordinarily would do. But in this case, the president largely abdicated his responsibility because he was watching it unfold on television. And so it fell to the vice president to take those steps.
But I understand there's only one regret in his mind. It has nothing to do with maybe better steps to guard against COVID. What is his one regret that he told you and Carol about?
You know, Dimitri, it's chilling. His one regret, he said, is that in the summer of 2020, in the wake of George Floyd's killing, when there were Black Lives Matter demonstrations here in Washington, but also in Portland, in Seattle, in Minneapolis, all around the country, he regretted that he did not send military, active duty troops into the streets of those cities to restore order and to basically quiet and quell the protesters. It's amazing to think about because these, you know, some of the elements of these protests were violent, but they were largely peaceful. And these were people exercising their First Amendment rights. And he wanted to send the military after them. And the reason he wanted to do it was because he thought it would make him look strong and tough, and that would bear him fruit in the November 3rd election.
I believe that you and Carol are the best among us when it comes to Washington journalists. And I also believe you had to have known when you went down to Mar-a-Lago to speak with the president on the record for this book that he would basically dump, you know, one garbage can after another full of lies, half-truths, and so forth at your feet. But then I guess you believed you had to interview him, given the chance, right?
Of course. And, you know, first of all, thank you so much for that high praise. It means a lot to me, and I know it does to Carol as well. And, you know, we wanted to interview Trump. We knew that he was probably not going to be truthful in his answers. He very rarely is. And I've interviewed him a number of times over the years for The Washington Post, and he has lied in those settings as well. But, you know, we're journalists and we're trying to seek the truth, and we want facts and we want all sides of the story. We want to understand, especially if it's a principle that we're writing about, in this case, Donald Trump, former President Trump. We want to hear from him directly, no matter what he has to say. That's valuable for our reporting. I think it's valuable for our readers to read what he has to say. And it's the reason why we devoted so many pages to our book, to recounting that interview and to airing what he told us, even though some of it is not true. We, of course, set it in context and make clear in reading the narrative of the book that what he's saying is not true. But it's important for the readers to see it themselves, for the public to hear it.
You know, the fact is the former president was not always focused, not often patient. So you could argue he never really had the makings of someone who could carry out a coup. He was better at ranting and raving on Twitter. Have you and Carol thought at all about what if we get a true strong man or woman, someone who is determined to make our country an autocracy without the need for media attention that Donald Trump craves, and with much more organization and determination? I guess the large question is, would our democracy hold in that instance?
You know, that is such a smart point to raise, because it's a real fear that we had in doing this reporting. But it's also a fear that that some leaders in our government expressed to us, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who made the point that Trump is sort of a deranged person. He's a slob. He's not disciplined. He's not effective. And yet, you know, this could happen again. And what if somebody who is disciplined, who is effective and strategic and can follow a plan and does not get so easily distracted and is smarter and more cunning, what if somebody like that were president and had the same authoritarian instincts and impulses as Trump? The institutions may not hold in the future. What Trump revealed, I think, to the country is just how fragile our institutions are, how fragile our Constitution is, how fragile our democracy is. It held together, but one of the reasons it held together is because Trump was so ineffective at executing what he wanted done.
And that is the Washington Post's Phil Rucker, who joined us via Skype. He is the co-author, along with Carol Lenning, of the bestseller, I Alone Can Fix It, Donald Trump's Catastrophic Final Year.